underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester Center, Vermont, and Saratoga Springs, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in Public Health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Roz Chass has published more than 1,000 cartoons in The New Yorker since 1978. Her frantic and disheveled characters have become icons of American humor. Her 2014 memoir and cartoons about caring for her aging parents, Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant, spent more than 100 weeks at number one on the New York Times bestseller list. Her new book is Going Into Town, A Love Letter to New York, an illustrated ode, guide, thank you note to Manhattan. It is a great pleasure to welcome Roz Chast to this week's book show. Thank you very much for being with us. What a great pleasure.
Well, thank you for having me.
What went into the decision or into the process of putting together a book about New York, the city you are from?
Well, the book started, it's sort of based around a booklet that I had made for my daughter. We had moved out of the city. My husband and I spent 10 years in Manhattan, had one child, moved to Park Slope in Brooklyn. Second child left the city completely, mostly for financial reasons. We just couldn't afford it with two kids. And so we brought up our kids outside of the city. And I had taken my daughter into New York with me countless times. But as anybody knows from being a passenger in the driver's seat in a car, it's like magic. You get into the car at point A, then you get out of the car at point B. You have no idea how you got there, really. And before she was going to college in Manhattan, and before she decided to go to college in Manhattan, before she left for college, I decided I wanted to check up on her sense of logistics, just to see how much of getting around Manhattan she understood, partly for her safety and also because I wanted her to enjoy the city, and I felt like she would enjoy it more if she knew how to get around. So I said, well, Manhattan's laid out like a grid. It's actually very easy to get around. And she said, what do you mean? So I got a piece of paper and I drew, the vertical lines. I said, these are the avenues, and these horizontal lines here, these are your streets. So if you want to go from 49th Street to 53rd Street, you walk uptown four blocks. And she actually said to me, what's a block? Because we don't have blocks. We have a little bit of sidewalk in town, but there's no sidewalk on our street.
Sure.
So I made her this booklet. It was called Nina's Basic New York City Book, and it had all kinds of information I thought she would need. Very small little booklet that she could, just on typing paper, a lot of little drawings, something she could take with her, put in her back pocket. It had stuff like how the streets are laid out, that Fifth Avenue divides the east side from the west side, and how, that the numbers increase as you go away from Fifth Avenue towards the rivers. Here's the East River, here's the West River. This is the east side, this is the west side, this is uptown, this is downtown. What the different neighborhoods were, a little bit about the subways. I had a subway map in there. These are the east side trains. These are the west side trains. This is the shuttle. This is like how you switch. These are, important cross streets for you to know. This is what a cross street is. Stuff that is so basic that a lot of times guidebooks don't tell people that. They tell you, where you should go. You should go to this museum or that museum, but they don't tell you the underpinning architecture. And so it was that, how to hail a cab, just basic stuff, and a lot of little drawings. And then after 4 years, she gave it back to me, and she said it had been really helpful. So I sent it to my agent, and I said, do you think that there's a book here? And she said, definitely. But as I started working on it, it became something more than that. I realized that I felt like I really did owe New York. I love New York City, specifically Manhattan, so much. I feel like I owe it my life in many ways. And it needed to be more than just a guide. I wanted it to be also a love letter and a thank you letter.
I find it interesting, just at the very beginning, you say this is not a definitive guidebook to Manhattan. In fact, it's not really a guidebook. There's nothing in here about the Statue of Liberty, for example. Why? Because I've never been.
Yeah, I've never been.
I've never been either. What do you, and I think many New Yorkers would say that. I don't know why, though.
Well, there's a lot of reasons. I think it seems very, very involved. It seems like there might be like lines, like really long lines.
Right.
It seems like it might be very crowded with tourists. And I tend to not want to be in areas where there's, I don't dislike tourists. I just don't want to be in the middle of like a crush of them, you know?
It involves a boat.
It involves a boat. Yeah. I mean, once you're there, it's not like you can say, you know what, this is kind of boring. I think I'll go, you know, I'm done. I'm done with the Statue of Liberty thing. No, you have to wait until the boat goes back. And I think that, for me, causes a certain amount of anxiety.
Did you, in this process, I was thinking about this as I was reading this, and even as you were putting together the original pamphlet for your daughter, is there a realization that you know less about the city than you think you did?
I never thought I knew that much about the city.
Mm.
I thought I knew enough to sort of give her sort of a broad strokes outline about it. And I felt like I knew enough about the city that I could impart to her just how to get around, and also that I loved it so much that I felt like I could sort of inspire some enthusiasm in her for it.
Of course, from those on the outside looking in at that gesture, that seems just lovely and beautiful and such a gift to her. I assume she appreciated it.
She did, yeah.
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 Let's talk about Manhattan as far as your love. You were born
Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn.
Yeah.
So what did Manhattan mean to you as a Brooklynite?
Oh, golly. Manhattan was really the shining city on the hill when I was growing up. I mean, it was what, you know, you're going into the city. It was this sort of special place and very different. I mean, Brooklyn is so huge. It's far from monolithic. And when people talk about Brooklyn as hipsters, it just cracks me up because Brooklyn is just so, you know, insert swear word here, huge, that the amount, it's like 10% is hipsters, it's 10%, probably less, probably like 6 or 7%. The rest are just these giant sort of neighborhoods, each one of them as big as any small city, like, you know, 20,000, 40,000 people. And a lot of times in your neighborhood, you don't even leave. There are people who don't even, never mind, they don't go into Manhattan. They don't even leave their neighborhood, you know? So that's what it was like growing up in Brooklyn. And for me, when I started going into Manhattan, I probably started, I mean, I took trips into the city with my parents when I was young, you know, a bunch of times, but we would always turn around and go back home. When I was around 14, I started going in on my own and started exploring a little bit. And I just loved it. It just seemed very, there were people from all over. And in my neighborhood, there were just people from my neighborhood. Manhattan seemed very international. It seemed cosmopolitan. It was like there were artists there. It was just so much more interesting.
Were you a museum kid? Did you go to the museums?
Yes, definitely a museum kid. Loved MoMA, loved the Metropolitan Museum. Definitely a museum kid, but mostly just a walking around kid. I loved, you know, walking around and discovering, like, wow, all this street sells are like Indian, there's like Indian grocery store after Indian grocery store. It's like Indian spices. And I would buy, you know, I didn't have much money, but I would buy like a dollar's worth of some beautiful spice, you know, and then just kind of have it.
It is interesting, though, that many people who live in the outer boroughs, Brooklyn being a great example, but certainly for Bronx or even Staten Island, where people have great pride in where they come from. Did you feel that of like, hey, Brooklyn?
No, I didn't. I didn't feel it at all. I mean, I really disliked it. I was not a happy kid, and I was a very unhappy teenager. And somebody asked me like to describe myself, what it was like when I was when I was a teenager, and I thought, well, I was shy, I was hostile, and I was paranoid, you know? So, like, that doesn't really, like, work very well to make friends. I mean, drawing for me was the only thing that wasn't a disaster.
The name of the new book is Going Into Town, A Love Letter to New York. In the drawing, did you use the landscape early on in your drawing as something that you found interesting to draw?
What do you
things in the city when you would visit, when you would go into Manhattan or even at home? Would
I
you?
I think the people. I found the people very interesting, and I drew people on the subway. I drew people that I would see on the street that were interesting. I would write down like things I overheard. That was what was interesting to me about it, was the people first and foremost, and then after that, just the landscape in which they were.
I assume at some level that's still the case, that it's
definitely
still the people, because that seems to be such a quality of your work.
Yeah, it's definitely the people first and foremost, but I also like the landscape of it. I like the detail. There's one thing about Manhattan that makes it so unique, and that's its density, because it can't expand. And most cities, even if they're interesting, even if the city center is interesting, there's that whole aspect of endless expansion. You know, when you're in some town, I don't know, like Phoenix or whatever, and it's like, are we still in Phoenix? I don't even understand what this is. You know, it's just like block after block after block, and it makes no sense to me. But Manhattan makes, it goes all the way to the edge, then it can't go anymore. You know, it's an island.
You say in the book, at its widest, Manhattan is only 2.3 miles across. You could probably plug in a toaster in an apartment near the Hudson River, run the cord along 14th Street, and make yourself some toast near the East River.
Yes, you could definitely do this. I mean, it wouldn't even take that many extension cords.
And that's in a whole part of the book about just how fun of the enjoyment of walking around the city.
Yeah.
Looking at things that are around you.
Completely. It's really fun to walk around.
Do you think that takes, and I apologize for this term, but an artistic eye to sort of notice the things that are around? Because so many of us, as you look, especially in the city now, everybody's looking at their phone. But even prior to that, people were always looking down or looking ahead and maybe not looking up and around and seeing what was happening.
I'm not sure. I mean, to me, I think I'm so biased towards the landscape of New York that I feel like if people looked around, they would be sort of excited. But it is true. I mean, like, I can wander. Yesterday, I was in M&J Trimmings. I don't know if you know the store. It's in the garment district, and there are still a number of these trimming stores left. They're fewer than there used to be. But these are places that I don't even know what people use some of this stuff for, but they have like racks and racks and racks of like just the weirdest like trimmings. Like, I don't know, do you put them on the bottom of your lampshade or do you put them on a sofa? It's a mystery, but they were so great. And I thought like, boy, I want to come back here and I want to get like a yard of like 20 different types of these trimmings. They make me very happy to look at, but that might just be me. That could be just me.
And to think someone is making their living of selling those, that's
yes,
what's great.
But also that somebody made them, that they made these great tassels or this trimming. I mean, some of them were just so outlandish and wonderful, and just I could not imagine using them for anything, but I just loved that they existed, you know.
And that's very similar. It seems to me that's not unlike you as a child going and with the little money you had of getting
the little spices
the little
to
spices.
Look at. Yeah. That's probably true.
Do you think that in the looking at the city, there is of course the famous Saul Steinberg cover in a New Yorker, the New Yorker's view of the world.
Yeah.
Do you think you have that view or share that view at all?
For better or worse, I probably do. A certain kind of myopia where, you know, New York becomes almost the entire universe. And then there's this kind of, well, I'm sort of describing the Saul Steinberg cover.
Yeah.
And then there's this kind of area in the middle that you don't really understand. And then there's like Los Angeles and then, you know, San Francisco. And then there's like Japan. But that part in the middle is a little bit not understandable. But I honestly don't understand it. I think it's also the sense of scale that I don't get. I was traveling. I was in Texas. I was in Dallas. And the only thing about Texas that at that moment, not the only thing I knew, but at that moment, the only thing that I was thinking about was this town called Marfa, which is like a kind of where a lot of artists live. I think it was, started by some famous artist of the 70s, and it's become a kind of art colony. So I asked somebody, like, how far away is Marfa from Dallas? And they just laughed. They said it was, like, over 12 hours. And that just kind of, like, how could we still be in Texas and have something 12 hours away? You know, my husband and I, we live in Connecticut. We go to Rhode Island for the summer. It's like 2.5 hours away. And it just feels we've traveled so long. But so, like, the idea of a state being over 12 hours across just is baffling to me. I don't get it at all.
You have some photographs in the book.
Yes.
While you're walking around, keep your eyes open for interesting storefronts or objects or doorways. And you have a picture of a storefront and an object in a doorway. Do you find yourself photographing the city when you go in?
I do sometimes. I mean, things that the detail, I guess, that I don't know, that it's the kind of, I like it visually, and I respond to it visually much more strongly than I do to, I don't know, like going on a hike and looking at nature, where to me, I don't have anything against nature. I like nature. Nature's great. But it's like, I don't know the names of everything. So to me, it's like, there's a tree. Okay. I could tell you, one time I agreed to illustrate. It was a mistake. Shouldn't have done it. But the book was all right. It was a children's book that took place in the woods. And drawing, like when they were inside of their cave, or wherever, I can't remember, they lived in a cave, I think, this family. When they were inside the cave, I was fine. But when they had to walk through the forest, it was like a nightmare. It was like, okay, here's the forest. What's on the floor? Okay, there might be like a branch and a log that fell. So I would draw like a tree that fell, like a log. And then I put a couple of rocks. And then I would just kind of run out of ideas, you know, be like, I don't know what's on the floor of a forest. I have no idea. Like, I could invent an apartment endlessly, you know, with complete pleasure, you know, the upholstery, the tassels, the lampshades, the styles of lamps. I mean, I love just for my own fun drawing lamps, the lamps of my life, the lamps I imagine, lamps I've dreamed about, lamps I've seen. But nature, I love looking at people who can really paint it, but like I can't. It just doesn't.
And you have a whole section here on standpipes.
So that's my nature.
Yes.
That's like standpipes in New York to me are like when I discover a new species, it's like a botanist discovering a new type of plant or something.
You have a cartoon in here where there's one standpipe talking to another, where it's, what did I do? And the one has sort of downward.
She's turning away.
Yeah. Said, shut up, I'm not talking to you.
Yeah, they're very anthropomorphic, and I can, you know, picture like their dialogues and stuff.
You do have a whole section on the subway. I mean,
yes.
I would think that could have taken over the book.
Yes,
it
could. I could write a whole book about the subway. The New York subway is not like any other subway anywhere. For one thing, it runs 24 hours. For another thing, parts of it are new and shiny and great. There's, you know, the Second Avenue subway, which is new. There's a couple of new subway stops that are just unbelievably beautiful. But there's a lot of it that's really scarily old. And it's sort of hilarious. It's almost like sometimes like a dream when you're walking like 3 or 4 stories down and you're on some subway platform and you see these like tiles that are sort of falling apart. They haven't really probably been touched since the 20s, and it's sort of filthy. And then like a rat just kind of like went around, and then there's like this water, but you think maybe it's not water. It's probably some other like horrible thing. It's like rat afterbirth or something. And the pipes, there's like a pipe sticking out, and it really, and wires, like exposed wires. And you think that's bad. You know, there should not be pipes and wires. But, you know, it somehow manages to work. So, yeah, the New York subway system is extremely complex, and it runs all the time. So, yeah, it could be a whole book.
I've been doing this for over 30 years, and I just have to say, you have made me insanely happy by just using the term rat afterbirth on the air.
Thank you. Thank you.
I find that delightful.
You may never hear that again.
I probably will never hear that.
Yeah.
And in possibly the worst segue ever in the history of radio, you also have a chapter in here on food.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Which is obviously so essential to New York.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you won't run out of food in New York. Every nationality, every aversion, every allergy, every everything, and combinations thereof are represented. So yeah, that's restaurants are a very big part of New York.
Was there anything that was a challenge for you in putting the book together?
Figuring out how to put it together so it wasn't just like random chapters. And I don't know if, I mean, I start out, I wanted it to have like a sort of logical progression where, you know, if you were going to the city, the things, well, first telling people the reason why I wrote it, and then sort of starting like walking around. And that, I think, is the basis. Like, well, the maps, like first here's sort of how it's laid out. And now that you know this, now you should walk around and explore. And, you know, sometimes then the next chapter would be about the subway, because sometimes it takes a little too long to walk someplace. And this is how the subway works. And so, you know, that was the hardest thing for me, to figure out a kind of a narrative arc, I guess.
There's a wonderful two-page spread in here about things to do in the city. And you have Broadway play, be Hamilton.
Yeah.
Off-Broadway, Carter. And yeah. Then off-off-Broadway.
Yes.
Millard Fillmore.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Oh, my God. You would not. He's a fascinating guy.
But it does, and I would assume, and we were talking about the subway, but it just seems as though when you put your mind to any aspect of the city, that you wouldn't come up empty, right? Because there's so many different things
that we
identify with the city.
I love it. I really honestly do love it so much, and I do love walking around in the city almost more than anything else. And I am a very sedentary person. I mean, very little about physical activity interests me. I would much rather, you know, sit and work on a project or read or, you know, play my ukulele, or, you know, the idea of walking for walking's sake is just not anything interesting to me. But walking in New York is a pleasure.
Do you miss living there at all now?
I miss it all the time, which is why I have a friend of mine calls it a pomme de terre in the city. It only took 30 years. but yeah, I do have a little studio apartment there. I miss it all the time. It's the only place I feel like I'm home.
Do you have a studio in the studio?
Sort of. I mean, it's not like my studio at home, but I do have a little studio within the studio.
That allows you to
yeah,
work.
And, yeah, a little bit.
And that process, I assume, is also ongoing. I mean, are you always working in some sense?
In some way, yeah. Yeah. In some ways, I feel like my work and my life are kind of braided together in some way.
Which is kind of lovely if you think about it.
For me, I like it. I mean, yeah. Yeah, it makes it. I don't know if I could. I don't think I could do it in some other way, you know. And this is again why I feel like I owe, you know, when I was writing, I felt like I owed New York a thank you letter as well, because it was really coming to Manhattan was the first time in my life that I felt like my life was not going to be a complete disaster. I was not, as I said, an optimistic person or a happy person, and I don't think I'm optimistic. I'm not an optimistic person now, but I'm a lot happier than I was when I was a kid. And a lot of it, I feel like, has to do with the fact that coming to New York, like many other people who came there, I came there because I had this sort of dream. And, you know, like E.B. White in his wonderful book, Here is New York, wrote, you know, nobody should come to New York unless they're willing to be lucky. And, you know, he also writes about how there are three types of New Yorkers: the people who were born there, who take the turbulence for granted. Then there's the commuters, who give it its tidal energy. And then there are the questers, the people who come from elsewhere to hopefully make their dream come true. And for me, even though I grew up there, I didn't grow up in Manhattan, I grew up in Brooklyn. And that was as far away in many ways as like Mumbai or the Yukon Territories or Omaha. And so, yeah, New York is like a dream city for me.
The book is such a delight and so beautiful. It is Going Into Town, A Love Letter to New York. It is published by Bloomsbury. Roz Chass, what a great pleasure. Thank you so much for spending time with us.
Thank you.
Great pleasure. Again, the name of the book is Going Into Town, A Love Letter to New York. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org, and you can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LaDuke produces our program. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.